intercepted by Notre Dame.
For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
touchdown Notre Dame,
or Irish win.
He's in for touchdown. The Irish have come from behind.
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. Also joining us tonight, world-renowned psychiatrist Dr. Phil. That's actually a joke. I figured he might be able to help us out.
We need Dr. Lou. Forget Dr. Phil.
Yeah, exactly.
We talk about him more on this program than I think probably any other Notre Dame past player or coach, but that's just because of our own personal experiences.
Yeah, so I get a call from my brother from Chicago's airport about 5 minutes ago. He was flying back from Rome, and because of that airplane that skidded off the runway, they shut down the airport, so he got stuck there. And he said it dawned on him on the plane that the demise of Notre Dame football started when Monk Molloy took over, and we've had a losing record since then. whatever that means.
I don't know.
But yeah, anyway,
I don't know what that means. I don't even know if it's a demise.
We've got some sort of curse going on. That's
no,
for sure.
No. They play lousy football. Okay,
let's get this curse and all this. No, I know that. But let's do this. Let's break this down a little bit. I mean, we don't have all night to do this, unfortunately. But let's kind of start with the good. The good was the first drive of the game. Well, not really the first drive, but maybe the first two drives. Then all of a sudden you have these horrendous calls that go against us. And as I watched the replay, that offsides wasn't that bad. I mean, it actually looked like he might have timed it unbelievably.
Yeah, no, that wasn't offsides.
I didn't really think that was that bad. However,
boy, it sure looked like it from the stands. I mean,
yeah, and you got the whole stadium going up in arms, and then you got the players reacting.
The spot was terrible.
Spot was ridiculous. That I don't get. I really don't get that one. I would love for the Big East officials to at least have to explain. Here's what happened there.
We can't start this conversation talking about the officials. I mean, that was the only. call of the day.
Here's the fact of the matter is
they whooped our ass. That's the bottom line.
I know that. But here's the point. That's when things broke down, is right from there. From that point, the whole game just kaputted.
No. I mean,
you
think we would have competed better?
We were up 3-0.
What's that?
We were up 3-0 at that point.
Do you think we would have been up 10-0 if we would have made that first down?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that. But the ultimate point that I'm getting at is I really think the problem with the football team is a problem of confidence and a problem of mentality, not a problem of do we have the athletes.
Oh, I agree, but I think Saturday we played a much better football team. I don't think there was any problem Saturday with our confidence or with our mojo or with our
I thought all over the field.
We just got taken to the woodshed by a team that looked a lot like we looked like in 1990 and 1991 and 1992. I mean, that is a team that has a guy at the helm who knows exactly what he wants to do. And let's keep this in perspective a little bit. One of the worst Notre Dame football teams in history beat Jim Harbaugh's Stanford team in their first year because he was just starting to put together what he wanted to do. And I think the only positive spin that we can put on this is that the roles are reversed right now. And Brian Kelly is just starting to put in place what he is trying to do. And that means that we got to believe in this guy and we got to be patient. And I've seen enough, you know, bright spots. I would say the only thing is football philosophy that this comes down to. You're never going to like Brian Kelly. You're never going to be in his, you know, you're never going to back him if you don't like the spread, you don't like his brand of football. A guy sitting next to me during the game made a great point. Simple but great. He said, a quick strike offense is no good if you don't strike. And we didn't strike Saturday.
No, we didn't. And we ended up paying the price for it. The only knock I got with Brian Kelly, and I'm sure, although I do understand that this goes both ways, that's not a clear-cut evidence, but when it's 19-6 and there's 13 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you're two scores away. Okay? You're only two scores away. Now, you can argue all day long about the bad call on third, where he got too cute and tried to go deep, which, by the way, Floyd was wide open for the first by a yard.
You and I agreed completely on this because we texted each other. What they should have done when they had it, they made nothing on first down. On second down, I think Armando got like 9 yards or 8.5 yards. And what they should have done is ran to the line, snapped the ball, and Chris snuck it to move the chains. Now, from today's press conference, it sounds like there's a real issue, which I raised with my friend Boomer yesterday, and that is that they're protecting Chris. You notice that they didn't run any quarterback draws. They didn't run any option with him. They didn't run any sneaks with him. I mean, the Michigan game shook them up, and that is a liability in the spread because the quarterback's mobility and willingness to stick his nose in there and run the ball is a weapon, and that means that they're not operating, or at least, you know, whether it's conscious or subconscious. I think Kelly, as much today, said in his press conference that it was consciously.
Well, I totally agree on that.
That doesn't help us because
I guess on the third down call, here's the problem. Yeah, it was a bad call on that call. But then
you
got fourth down
for a yard, and you keep
and
the drive alive.
It's 19-6, there's 13 minutes to go.
Down,
and if you punt the football down inside the 10,
you're going to say that
that's another subject.
I don't think so. I don't have any problem.
Let's just say you get it inside the 20. Now you've got to drive the length of the football field, and your defense just made a play the previous.
That made no sense.
Set it down. So there's a little bit of confidence going, but at least not as much pressure as when you turn it over inside your own 40, and now they got to go less than half the football field. And the momentum's in their favor, and the game is basically over. Not that it wasn't over before that point, but at least you gave them a chance to stay in the football game, and it got taken away from them. However, I totally agree that that can go both ways. Brian Kelly gets the first down there. Momentum starts to build. All of a sudden, we score and look out. So,
they hadn't had really any much success running the ball the entire day. I mean, I kind of looked up. I don't know what I was, but it was basically just a straight handoff to Jonas up the middle, wasn't it? And I know somebody whiffed.
Well, no, it was kind of a little bit offset. They went to the weak side, and somebody did whiff. I mean, somebody absolutely whiffed. And I don't know if it was Trevor or who it was, but yeah, they clearly went to the weak side, and the guy just made a play. And you know, what do you do? To me, I mean, the overall. Let me make the punting point really quick. Obviously, I was at the game Saturday, so I'm there in the stadium. And when you're at the stadium, you see a bunch of other things that you don't see when you're watching on TV. One of the things I saw was Turk punting practices. For about 40 attempts, I saw one ball out of the 40 turnover, meaning that when you're a punter and you punt,
he's a mess right now.
The idea is you turn the ball over by spiraling it like a forward pass, and when the ball starts to come down, it's like a missile and it comes down as a spiral. I saw one out of 40. And that, to me, is not a good sign if we absolutely have nobody else better than him.
Well, it's so crazy. I mean, you know, I think Kelly said after the game, the place kicker's doing a good job, the kickoff coverage team is a good job, everything else is lousy. That might be a little bit extreme. I think I think Stanford returned the first punt against us all year Saturday. The problem is our punting itself has been so poor. That's why the punt coverage has never been tested because – he did the little sidestep where he tried to kick it down the sidelines, and that was about an 11-yarder. And yeah, I don't know. He's really struggling. Kickoff returns were just really poor. I would think that there's a pretty good chance that, you know, you'll see some new faces in there, maybe Bennett Jackson on the kickoff returns. Goodman does a pretty decent job on the punt returns. But yeah, there's just weak spots right now that are costing them yardage and costing them momentum. And special teams is one of them. The offense obviously struggled. You know, this was a game where, again, when a team is growing, when a team is with a new staff and stuff, usually what the issue is inconsistency and inability to put it all together, the three phases of the game. You always hear coaches talk about the three phases of the game. I didn't think the defense played all that badly on Saturday. They didn't. The problem is that they always have one thing that they do really badly. And against Michigan, it was giving up the big play. They were great on third down. Saturday, they didn't give up any big plays, really. but they were terrible on the money down.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was way too reminiscent of what we see in the past, which is we get it to a third down situation and then we just cannot stop anybody.
I think there was one scoring drive where they had five consecutive third downs,
right,
and converted all of them.
Right.
You know, and there were some, you know, third and nines, third and eights, third and thirteens mixed in there too. They weren't all third and short. And that was really discouraging because that is how you change a game. And now, granted, the couple times they did stop them on third down, you know, the offense went three and out. The couple times that they turned Stanford over, you know, they got two picks. You know, the defensive backfield, I think, continues to make some improvements. Blanton had a couple good plays. They got a little bit lucky on a couple plays. But still, so there's signs. You know, there's signs that they're playing better and they're better coached, but there's always kind of one glaring thing that's real. Again, not that, you know, not that they, it cost them the game. They weren't in this game, I don't think, really, except for a little while. And but they got, you know, it was an offensive loss on Saturday. It wasn't a defensive loss.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, they obviously we really didn't play all that bad defensively, other than the sore spots on third down. I mean, that's what looked worse. Obviously, we can't go any further on the show without mentioning what an unbelievable game Teo had. He's just clearly a notch above. I mean, that kid is – I've never seen anything like that at Notre Dame Stadium, where he just absolutely owned the middle of the football field.
To tell you the truth, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, to me, if you've got one guy making that many tackles, that means he's either – you know, a lot faster than his fellow linebackers, or he, I don't understand. I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing for a single guy to
I don't think it is. I agree with you. It's not a good thing, but Thank God he was capable of that, because had he not been doing that, we would have been in real big trouble. Yeah.
Could be in any bigger trouble than we were in.
Yeah, true. But I don't know if that's a result of the 3-4 that we played, or the, whatever the alignment was in that particular situation, but clearly the defensive line is not getting any penetration, number one, and they're not making any tackles,
right,
number two.
That was the other big glaring, was Luck was basically, you know, he was not really messed with in the entire day. He had a lot of room, you know, a lot of time, especially on third down. That exactly nails it. I mean, we just are not putting any pressure. We're not putting any pressure on him at all. And a couple times that we brought blitzers, man, he just ate us up.
Yeah, he did. No, he picked us apart. The other thing is, I mean, there's two other points that I wanted to make. One is, I watched the Stanford sidelines, and they clearly are in the football game. Every single time Chris handed off, the entire sidelines yelled draw. I don't know if you heard that during the game, but every single time the ball went in his hands, the entire sidelines yelled draw. And I think it's silly to think that doesn't do anything. It absolutely has an effect, because the whole defense hears it, so they know. And that impressed me. The second thing was Luck on the sidelines. I mean, that kid was in the football game. He was going up and down, talking to his players. At key points, was rolling his finger forward like, come on, here we go. We're going to do, you know, we need to get out there, and we need to get it going right now. I mean, he was just obviously a leader on that sidelines, and that goes a long way. And I obviously, we're not seeing that from Chris. I mean, he did throw some good balls. I feel bad because he had some early drops, and a lot of times when a quarterback goes through that, those early drops, I mean, it is frustrating, and it leaves you, your confidence takes a hit.
It's two things. I mean, you know, I think Stanford is. They're a program now. I mean, those players know the level of intensity that their coach brings, and they know that that's where they need to be to play. So there's that. But I think the other thing that you're referring to, how into it they were and Luck and that type of thing, is you can tell that this is a team that realizes it has a chance to do something pretty special. I mean, if they get past Oregon. You know, they're going to be a top five. I mean, they are, I think they're that good. I mean, you know, they went from 16-9, you know, beating a 1-2 Notre Dame team who has the 107th ranked defense in the country. You know, like, why does that happen? You know, yeah. I mean, I think people watched him for the first time. You know, their first three games were all out west, and not many people saw him. And, you know, the media and coaches and probably a few more people, you know, because they're playing Notre Dame on NBC, got a chance to watch them. And I think we're rightly impressed. I mean, they do a lot of things really well. The number one thing is that they're physical as hell. You know, up front, they whooped us.
Yeah, they did.
Their line is big and strong, and their defensive line control the line of scrimmage.
They absolutely controlled it. But, you know, the other thing that I saw that impressed me was, I got to be honest with you, I thought they completely had us dead to right. It's almost like they totally anticipated what they did that, number one. They also do a doggone good job of disguising their coverages. Because several times I was sitting there, and I was right in the back of the end zone, so it's a great perspective to watch from there because you see the offense and the defense right in front of you coming right at you. You know, you're not at a side view where it's kind of tough to see blocking schemes and things like that. So in the back of the end zone, I literally am seeing one-on-one coverage, and I'm saying to myself, Chris, you got one-on-one with Floyd. The second the ball snapped, the outside linebacker is dropping and looking at Floyd the whole way and then getting in between himself, the quarterback, and Floyd. And it happened on several occasions. In a couple of occasions, he had to sprint in order to get there.
Yeah.
And he clearly they somehow he knew that he was going to drop because he was anticipating a pass, and in a dead sprint, he got to the spot. And so everybody in the stadium was getting frustrated with Chris for throwing in that direction, but actually at the time of the ball, the snap, that was the right call. That was the right read. The unfortunate thing was we just didn't have enough time to where he could go off of that read. Right. You know, that every time Chris tried to go to his second and third option, I mean, he had somebody in his face.
And he also didn't do a particularly good job Saturday of feeling the rush either.
No.
You know, there were a couple times where he could have stepped up or he could have rolled or, he was so honed in and so kind of dialed in on a particular guy in a particular route or a particular, you know, kind of area of the field that he just, you know, he didn't, with that kind of innate instinct, didn't move up or slide or do those things that he needed to do to avoid the sack. Or, you know, avoid getting his arm.
Yeah, and the other thing that he did is when he did scramble, which is if there's one time when a quarterback can actually scan the field, it's when you're scrambling. Because when you're scrambling, you're away, there's nobody blocking your vision in front of you, and you're much better at seeing the rush, so you know exactly how much time you got. And in that situation, I don't know if you remember this play, but it was early in the first quarter. He tried to zip it in there to Floyd and threw it right through the arms of a Stanford DB who was curling back. Yep. And had he just looked up, T.G. Jones had him beat by like 8 yards. And all he needed to do was flip it up, and he's got T.J. Jones for a touchdown. But because he was locked in on his receiver underneath him and ended up making a bad pass, the Stanford DB turned and even though he's beat by 5 steps, almost ripped it off. But,
yeah.
You know, and I don't know, this is his fourth game now. Feeling the rush is one of those things that eventually comes, and you just kind of hope that he gets it. But there's some other things where it just didn't seem like, I mean, obviously the pick that he threw after coming back on the field after their score, that just was a bad read, a bad throw, a bad everything. And, yeah. You know, that's
one. There'll be more than enough material in the film room to. But you know, I was on the Notre Dame side of the field, and Kelly was just clearly frustrated.
Oh, yeah.
For most of the game, with his receivers, with the line play, he spent a lot of time when the offense came off the field. You know, in the back area of the bench, talking to his line, he was he was apoplectic. When they didn't make the 4th-and-1 with his offensive line coach, Ed Warner. I don't know if I say his name right. He went off on Chris a couple times. You know, it was just a real frustrating day for the head coach, the head play caller. It was just a real rough outing. And, you know, I think that this would have been a loss that would have been a lot easier to take had the outcome in the last couple of weeks been different. You know, if they would have squeaked away with the win in one of those two games or certainly both games, we'd be sitting here talking like, well, we got beat by a better football team Stanford's going to have a heck of a year. This was a stumble in the development of a quarterback who's only in his fourth game. This is a defense that played pretty well and held a Heisman Trophy contender, picked him off twice, and this is a team that threw for 300 yards against a defense that had only given up 90 a game. You know, we'd be looking at kind of a lot more of the positives because we'd be 3-1, or we'd be 2-2, and had won a tough game or a close game against a traditional opponent, all those kinds of things. But the fact that we lost two tough games, you could almost kind of see this coming, because they were two emotional losses, real heartbreakers. And it's not like they didn't compete Saturday, but they just got physically whipped by a team that really had cupcakes for a couple weeks, hadn't really expended a whole heck of a lot of energy or emotion mental capital the first
right.
couple weeks.
And I do think, Brian Kelly alluded to that in his press conference. Notre Dame has played, granted we beat Purdue out of the gate, but that's always an emotional game, because that's a rivalry that goes way back. But, I mean, doggone, we have played four tough football games, and we're about ready to go out and play Boston College to make it five. And I'd like to see other schools do the same thing and not have the wear and tear of it that it does have on you. And on top of all of this, we're dealing with the kind of losses that we've had to deal with. I mean, this
I don't
is...
know, you know, I mean, I don't know about you want to compare this to other schools. I mean, there are a lot of schools that play very competitive schedules. I mean, look at Boise playing Oregon State and Virginia Tech, in two of their first three games. I mean, on the road. They played Virginia Tech on the road and Oregon State at home last night. I mean,
I think that there's examples of that, but that's not the norm. The norm is to put a couple patsies on your first couple games. Is the norm?
I don't think you have the luxury of doing that when you're not in a conference.
I agree, and that's my point. Yeah, that exactly. But unfortunately for us, you can't do that. And then unfortunately for us,
we have patsies on our schedule. They're just in the last half
right,
of the season,
exactly.
The first half.
Right.
And we said that in our first show that, and I think Brian Kelly said it too, if he could flip the schedule, he would.
Right.
You bring a young quarterback along against Tulsa, Western Michigan, and Army, you're probably going to be in better shape than if you bring him along against, Purdue,
right.
Michigan, Michigan State,
right.
And Stanford.
No, I'd agree. Well, unfortunately, we could go on all night here, Ed, and I don't have that kind of time. But we might have to do another show tomorrow night just to get the rest of it off our chest.
Exactly. 2 half-hour therapy sessions.
Yeah, let's hope that somehow the Irish pull out of this nosedive and ultimately, I think they can. I mean, I think there's still
hope. The only way they're not going to win games the rest of the year is if they go in the tank.
Right. I don't see that.
It doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
I agree.
So, Boston College and Pittsburgh, watching them play a little bit this year, they can't hold a candle to Michigan State or Stanford or even Michigan, I don't think.
Right.
They're just not as good, not nearly as good. Those are games Notre Dame should compete hard and win.
I agree. No, I think you're absolutely right. Well, let's hope that does turn out for the Irish. For now, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanek, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.